the headlines this hour. The death toll from the recent earthquakes in Turkey and Syria rises to above 19,000 as search and rescue operations are still underway. President Raisi praises Iran's glorious achievements since the 1979 revolution, despite attempts by arrogant powers to hinder its progress. Also in the headlines, the EU pledges, quote, maximum support for Ukraine as President Zelensky tours around Europe to ask for more weapons. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The death toll from the devastating earthquakes in Turkey and in Syria has climbed to more than 19,000 as the search operation is still underway in the affected regions. According to official figures, more than 16,000 people have died in Turkey and over 3,160 have been confirmed dead in Syria. The death toll is expected to rise. A Syrian child has been pulled out alive from the rubble after 2 days. On Wednesday, a medical team found a baby alive in the Turkish province of Hatay. Another group of rescuers found four members of the same family alive under the wreckage. Rescue operations remain slow in many areas because of cold weather and a lack of necessary equipment despite the arrival of foreign teams in the two countries. Survivors in southern Turkey and in northern Syria have spent a third night in the freezing cold.
A devastating 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck southeastern Turkey and northwestern Syria early on Monday. The deadly quake and a string of aftershocks have killed thousands of people in both countries and injured more. Hundreds of buildings in both Syria and Turkey have been reduced to rubbles. Rescue workers are still working in freezing temperatures to find those still trapped under debris. While Turkey has been aided by its allies and Western partners to cope with the crisis, aid is trickling to sanctions-hit Syria. Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad has highlighted Syria's need for humanitarian assistance, warning that the U.S. sanctions have worsened the circumstances as the illegal bans have prevented the delivery of everything to the country. The catastrophe of the earthquake that struck Syria is great, and what has increased its depth is the difficult circumstances that the country has been going through for the past 12 years as it's fighting terrorism and its supporters. What exacerbated the tragedy and catastrophe was the sanctions imposed by the United States and Western countries on Syria. The Syrian top diplomat further said that Damascus had appealed to the member states of the United Nations, the General Secretariat of the organization, its relevant agencies and funds, the International Committee of the Red Cross, and other humanitarian action partners from international, governmental and non-governmental organizations to extend a helping hand and support Syria's efforts to confront the crisis.
You know, given that the war situation and economic, financial, unilateral, illegal, unilateral, inhumane Western sanctions imposed on Syria, at the same time when the U.S. Is imposing, and with its Western allies, imposing almost a blockade around Syria.
Calls are now getting louder on Western nations to lift their sanctions on Syria in a bid to expedite rescue operations. The Syrian Red Crescent has appealed to Western countries to provide aid to help the Arab country deal with the aftermath of devastating earthquakes. Syria is also grappling with the years of foreign-backed insurgency, which has devastated the country.
As Syria is reeling from the aftermath of the deadly earthquakes, the United States is working with partners to provide earthquake relief in Syria, but will stand firm against working with Syria's legitimate government headed by President Bashar al-Assad. The United States has refused normalization of relations with the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad or any direct reconstruction aid.
Lots of the airplane, cargo airplane, refused to land on Syrian airports because of the American and European sanctions. So even those countries who want to send humanitarian assistance, they cannot use the airplane cargo because of the sanctions.
Washington listed Syria as a state sponsor of terrorism in 1979, but since the beginning of the imposed war on Syria in 2011, the United States and its Western allies have imposed a number of economic sanctions and restrictions on Syria. U.S. sanctions intensified with the passing of the CISA Act in 2019, which was signed by former President Donald Trump. The sanctions have severely affected the Syrian economy, especially its construction, finance and energy sectors, and complicated the reconstruction effort.
The hurdles we have, if I talk about the area under government control, we don't have an access problem in terms of authorizations, but we have an access problem in terms of the capacity of the infrastructure to authorize to enable us to do it. I mean, this means we might have to repair a few roads here and there. And we're not the only one. The government is also working on that. But we are in a situation where it was already difficult to do that before. And now we are in a situation where we don't have any other option than doing it.
Syria has been in the throes of foreign-backed militancy since March 2011. While the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group was crushed by the Syrian government, militant outfits continue to hold sway in some parts of the country under the patronage of Western powers. The United States has also established several military bases in northern Syria in a bid to help the terrorists there. Meanwhile, Iran has sent several batches of humanitarian aid to Syria to help the Arab country deal with the aftermath of the devastating earthquakes. The latest batch of aid included food, blankets and carpets. Iran will send more humanitarian supplies to Syria in the coming days. Iran has urged the international community to put pressure on the US to lift its cruel sanctions on Syria to facilitate aid deliveries. The Lebanese Hezbollah resistance movement has also sent convoys of humanitarian aid to earthquake-affected areas in Syria.
The UN Special Envoy for Syria says the Arab country is in desperate need of everything in terms of aid to pull through the impacts of the devastating earthquake. Geir Pedersen called for assurances that there would be no political hindrances to getting aid to where it was most needed. Curbs imposed by the U.S. and its Western allies have complicated international efforts to assist quake-hit Syrians. The U.S. has so far refused to lift the sanctions, despite repeated calls from Damascus and the international community.
Seeing the wall crack this badly, I'm scared, so I will continue to spend the night in the park, no matter how cold it is, rainy, snowy, or even a tsunami here in Aleppo. My children and I would rather live in the park instead of being buried. I thought I could make a simple temporary tent, so I bought some nylon ropes and plastic sheets tied to iron columns so that there will be less of a cold wind when my children slept.
Relief supply shortages in Syria are forcing many survivors of Monday's devastating earthquake to spend nights in freezing temperatures. Scores of people are left homeless and risk illness and other problems. Essential humanitarian relief items like tents are not available. The natural disaster has multiplied the tragedy that Syrians have been going through for over a decade due to the foreign-backed militancy and Western sanctions. President Ibrahim Raisi says Iran has made glorious achievements since the 1979 revolution, despite attempts by arrogant powers to get in the way of its progress. The Iranian president said that the rapid scientific progress and political development based on a religious democratic system were among those achievements. Raisi was addressing foreign ambassadors in Tehran ahead of the revolution's 44th anniversary. He said that arrogant powers cannot stand Iran's progress and take every opportunity to roughen Iran's path of success. The president underscored Western support for Iraq during the imposed war of the 1980s and massive sanctions on the Islamic Republic. Raisi said that Iran has shown good faith in its nuclear dispute with the West and is ready for a fair agreement on reviving the JCPOA, despite the West's vague promises. The Iranian president said, quote, under illusion, the West has made miscalculations in recent months.
It's unfortunate that Washington and the three European governments are under illusion and make miscalculations. They have been working to interfere in Iran's affairs instead of returning to their commitments under the JCPOA. Over the past months, we have been witnessing a new wave of complex designs by certain Western countries to meddle in Iran's domestic affairs, acting on false analysis and information provided by enemies of the Iranian nation. These countries put themselves in front of the resilient and proud Iranian nation. They launched one of the clearest examples of cognitive and hybrid wars against the Islamic Republic in recent months. During the recent riots, they provided totally incorrect information on the condition of women and Iran's internal developments and made utmost efforts to tarnish Iran's image in the international arena.
The president also said the West continues to create a toxic media environment around Iran. Raisi said that such efforts are doomed to fail and the Islamic Revolution will continue to walk the path of independence, freedom, and progress. Washington's anti-Tehran positions once again come to light as it announces fresh Iran-related sanctions. The U.S. Treasury Department said it has imposed sanctions on six Iran-based petrochemical manufacturers and their subsidiaries and three firms in Malaysia and Singapore. It said the sanctions were in response to the rigmarole in the production, sale, and shipment of Iranian petrochemicals and petroleum to buyers in Asia. The measures toe the line of the former U.S. government's maximum pressure policy to bring Iran's oil exports to zero. Nonetheless, data from companies that track the oil flows show that Iranian oil exports have hit new highs in the last 2 months of 2022. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran has criticized the U.N. nuclear watchdog for the leakage of information about the country's nuclear program. Mohammad Islami expressed regret over what he called the IAEA's unprofessional behavior. He reminded that Iran is interacting with the agency through the safeguards agreement. The Iranian nuclear chief also pointed out that his country has always been committed to the non-proliferation treaty and only seeks the nuclear technology for peaceful purposes. Islami made it clear that Iran would return to its commitments under the 2015 deal when other parties to the JCPOA fulfill their obligations. On Wednesday, the IAEA accused Iran of some modifications at a nuclear site in a leaked report. Tehran rejected the report, calling it incorrect interpretation by an IAEA inspector who also realized his error of judgment after Iran's explanation. Iranian and Russian TV channels are set to boost bilateral cooperation. In a meeting with the head of the IRIB World Service, a delegation of Russian television executives discussed practical measures to strengthen partnership. Gisumi Shahmedi has the details.
In line with the fourth meeting of Iran and Russia media cooperation, a delegation of Russian television executives, as well as TV and radio station managers, led by the Russian Deputy Minister of Digital Affairs, visited the IRIB World Service's TV and radio stations. That included the Spanish channel Hispan TV and the English news network Press TV, a chance for the Russian delegation to observe the technical developments up close.
Both the Russian and the Iranian side have reached a point where they are ready for practical steps after holding several rounds of meetings and signing cooperation agreements. We have laid the groundwork, and our audience will soon be enjoying our joint TV and radio productions.
The visit also provided the opportunity to discuss potential areas of cooperation.
We can cooperate in exchange of content. It's movies, TV series, it's cartoons and documentaries. There is a very broad field.
The details were carefully discussed in order to break down the steps and see how the two sides can take cooperation to the next level. First and foremost, representatives were appointed from both sides to be directly in touch and to be in charge of joint media productions from now on.
Iran and Russia are both under pressure and sanctions by Western countries, so this meeting and the one we had 2 days ago are of strategic importance. There is great potential, and I believe that we can immediately begin joint radio production.
But the highlight of this meeting was how to neutralize Western sanctions, particularly in the field of media, with the Iranian side sharing its valuable experiences in this regard.
We are witnessing a new world order, and under these circumstances, regional and international powers such as Russia, Iran, and China will be growing closer and develop stronger alliances. Russians are experiencing sanctions aimed at isolating them since the war in Ukraine has begun. We can share years of experience with them in this regard. Our media cooperation not only allows unheard voices to be heard, but it will also reshape public opinion.
Both sides agree that the groundwork has prepared and joint production can start in 2023, marking the beginning of a strategic alliance in a multipolar world where all voices can be heard. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
The European Union pledges more assistance for Ukraine in its war efforts as the conflict rages on in the battlefield.
We are well aware that the next few weeks and months will probably be decisive. This is not the time to tremble. This is the time to be lucid, and this is the time to deploy maximum support.
He said the EU has realized Kiev's needs and will now work to provide them. Shell also said it would be fair to use Russia's frozen assets to rebuild Ukraine. Meanwhile, the European Commission's chief Ursula von der Leyen said the EU's new sanctions will include export bans worth over 10 billion euros. Von der Leyen said that the sanctions will target, quote, Russian propagandists. Ukraine's president is on a European tour to press allies to deliver modern weapons to Kiev.
Ukraine needs such opportunities. We need artillery guns, shells for them, modern tanks, long-range missiles, modern aviation. I'm grateful to everyone who provides such armed assistance. We have to enhance the dynamics of our cooperation. We have to do it faster than the aggressor.
Zelensky said negotiations concerning long-range weapons are going forward, but he said he could not publicize all elements of the talks. The Ukrainian president was speaking in a joint press conference with the EU Commission chief and the head of the European Council. Earlier, Zelensky met with the French president and the German chancellor in Paris for more arms delivery. Zelensky has also visited London, where he urged the British prime minister to send fighter jets to Ukraine. Russia has warned the UK and Kiev's Western allies against any such moves. Moscow says it will have serious military and political consequences for the world. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Epic, glory, honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy. See the world through IRIB English Radio, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
In the limelight. Britain's economy has faced many challenges in recent years. The withdrawal of the country from the European Union and the expenses caused by the control of the coronavirus pandemic caused the economy to be about 20% smaller than in 2020. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, rejected calls to prevent sharp rises in domestic energy bills for all households in his March budget, meaning millions of Britons will see costs soar by about 40% from April. Instead, Jeremy Hunt will claim the extra support he's giving to the poorest and most vulnerable households, including those on benefits, in what he will describe as a more fairly targeted system of support. Demands for the Treasury to halt a planned rise in the energy price guarantee, the discounted cost of gas and electricity to consumers from £2,500 to £3,000 a year for the average household in the March budget, have been growing in recent weeks, particularly as the whole wholesale cost of energy has been falling. Because an additional £400 of extra government help with energy costs for all households made in monthly payments since October also ends in March, the effective rise for all but those under lowest incomes will be about 40%. Calls for the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, to stop the rise in the energy price guarantee have been led by consumer champion Martin Lewis, founder of the website MoneySavingExpert.com, who has said the move would be an obvious rabbit out of the hat that the Chancellor could afford to pull out of his red box in March. The Labour Party, meanwhile, has also been calling for the rise in the energy price guarantee to be stopped, and for the extra cost to the government of doing so to be met through the proceeds of a more punitive windfall tax on the vast profits of energy companies. But Treasury insiders have told The Observer that the move is not under consideration, partly because Treasury receipts from its own windfall tax on energy companies have been less than expected, and because of worries about exposing taxpayers to future market rise. Ruling out the move, a Treasury source said, while gas prices have fallen in recent months, they are still five times higher than the historical average and can just as easily increase. The source added, if the gas price spikes, the government will need to borrow billions of pounds more, while the energy price guarantee will continue to insulate millions of households from even higher wholesale gas prices. We need to reduce the taxpayer exposure to market volatility. Insulating every household and on an open-ended basis could have major implications for the public finances. Officials said that at the time of the autumn statement last November, the Treasury's own estimate for the proceeds of the windfall tax over 5 years was £55 billion. But because of recent falls in energy prices, this total has fallen by £25 billion and was now anticipated to come in closer to £30 billion. Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves said the prospect of such steep rises for most households was frightening and shameful at a time when energy giants were reaping huge profits. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a report, households in England and Wales will see the largest increase to their water bills in almost 20 years from this April, when they rise to an average of £448 a year. Industry body Water UK said the 7.5% increase would see customers pay around £1.23 per day on average, an increase of 8 pence per day, or an average of £31 more on last year's charges. Consumer groups warned the rise could prove the tipping point for one in five customers already struggling to pay. But Water UK claimed the water bills remained lower in real terms than they were a decade ago and said this year's increase reflected higher energy costs, with water firms using around 2% of the nation's electricity. It announced firms were set to invest a further £70 billion to eliminate harm from storm overflows and increase water supplies by building new reservoirs and national water transfer schemes, claiming that they were acutely aware of the impact of price rises on lower income and vulnerable customers and had recently increased the level of support they offered by more than £200 million. Water UK Director of Policy Stuart Colville said, "With an average increase of around 60 pence a week, most customers will again see a below-inflation increase in their water bill. However, we know that any increase is unwelcome, particularly at the moment." The Consumer Council for Water announced regional variations and factors such as whether a customer is metered and how much water they use meant some households could face rises significantly above or below the average. The Consumer Council for Water Chief Executive Emma Clancy said, "Water is essential for all of us, so no one should be worried about being able to afford their bill. These increases will bring more uncertainty to struggling households at a time when they can't be certain that they will get the help that they need." Emma Clancy added, "Low-income households need immediate relief and the long-term security of knowing their water bill will be affordable. It is not fair that struggling households face a postcode lottery when it comes to getting help with their water bill. That's why we urgently need a new water affordability scheme that provides consistent support based on people's needs." The website MSN.com has also covered the same story and tells us more. The impending recession could leave borrowers struggling to repay their debts, the high street bank Santander UK said as it put aside more cash to protect itself from potential defaults. The UK arm of the Spanish bank said recently that while the outlook for Britain's economy remained uncertain, a recession in 2023 was likely. It said that despite government support for energy bills, rising prices would continue to eat away at disposable income, which could impact lending repayments. The warning was issued alongside the bank's full-year results, which showed the lender put aside £321 million in 2022 to cover potential defaults, compared with the £233 million it released a year earlier as COVID restrictions began to lift. The higher figure was because of the deterioration in the economic environment, including higher interest rates, lower economic growth, and a drop in house prices, which Santander predicts will fall by about 10% to levels not seen since 2021. The bank said, "These challenges for households and businesses are expected to continue into 2023 and could impact credit quality," referring to the ability of borrowers to repay their loans and mortgages. On Wednesday, Virgin Money set aside £66 million to cover a possible rise in bad debts in the first quarter of this year. However, the Challenger Bank said repayments had been stable so far. Santander's provision for potential defaults weighed on the lender's profits, which rose just 2% to nearly £1.9 billion over the year to December. The flat growth was despite a 12% increase in net interest income to £4.5 billion, as the interest rate rise allowed it to charge more for mortgages and loans. Profits were also subdued by the £421 million it put aside to cover the cost of fraud and scams, as well as a £108 million regulatory fine from the Financial Conduct Authority. In December, the UK regulator issued the bank with a penalty over serious and persistent gaps in its anti-money laundering controls between 2012 and 2017. Santander UK said it was also affected by a marked slowdown in mortgage lending at the end of the year as interest rates increased to 3.5%.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Hidden Files. I grew up in the United States with a counting song that went like this. One little, two little, three little Indians, four little, five little, six little Indians, seven little, eight little, nine little Indians, 10 little Indian boys. Now this was supposed to be a song for kids to learn how to count. And the other part of it is they dive in the boat, and the boat turns over, 10 little, 9 little, 8 little Indian boys, and continues. If one thinks about what is being said, it is shocking, but as a kid, I just mimicked the lyrics like the other kids, not realizing the overall effect. I also grew up being shown Indian savages on Westerns and how the poor white man just wanted to live in peace and develop the land that he had discovered. But the Redskins would not let them live in peace. This is the other process, meaning dehumanizing people. And these are just two examples of the way the original inhabitants of North America, the natives, were demonized and discounted, even up to this day in what is now the United States. From the time the European colonizers stepped foot on that land, the white man saw the natives as less than themselves. They were less human, less smart, less civilized, less deserving, which led to the invaders being able to forcibly remove and exterminate much of the original population of the land a lot easier. Hello, and welcome to Hidden Files. Today we will be looking at the original inhabitants of North America, the natives. I am Marzia Hashimi. Welcome. Well, the natives had lived on that land for tens of thousands of years. In 1492, when Columbus actually landed there, there were 112 million indigenous people. 112 million indigenous people. Keep that number in mind, because as we fast forward and we go to 1650, we have gone from that number of 112 million to 6 million people. Imagine that, by 1650. Unfortunately, the tragedy is so multifaceted. We look at then from between 1776 to 1887, and 1.5 billion acres of native land was stolen. This is the story, only part of the tragedy of the natives. Well, from being free to roam and live on over a billion acres to being forced to live on reservations, this became the reality for most natives who didn't die at the hands of the colonizers. Reservations were set up by the whites to control the native population, while at the same time more of their land could be stolen. Harsh measures were implemented, and brainwashing and miseducation were techniques used, as well as the Christianization of the natives on the reservations. Now, the land that the Europeans forced the natives to live on usually was not as fertile as the land they were used to having, or was the type of terrain that they were not familiar with. And many different tribes were thrown together on a reservation, not giving thought to if they were friendly with each other or if the tribe was used to farming or not. We're going to look at the role reservations have played and continue to play in the oppression and attempted elimination of Native people with my first guest.
Bleak.
Oppression.
Small. They're beautiful and sad at the same time. It's beautiful because you're surrounded by people that are just like you. But it's sad because everything that affects big cities, whether it's drugs or alcohol, or everything's magnified on a reservation. You see it up front, like in your face.
Sick. You know, there's alcoholism, there's abuse, there's domestic violence. There's a lot of things that go on a reservation that really goes overlooked.
Just a compromise. It was an agreement based, well, forced agreement probably, that Native Americans were put kind of out of the way, out of sight.
Yeah. Prison. It's like where we were trapped.
Do you think it's the most common misconception about reservations?
That there's some kind of abundance, that Natives are happy, that they're caring for each other, that they live in some ancient way.
Ooh, sad.
Poor.
A concentration camp. Reservations were made to isolate Indian people in hope that we would die off.
Depressing.
Unfair, because they're not as good as other lands. They're the land that the government and people don't want.
Trapped? It wasn't great farmland, it wasn't great homeland. And so it kind of feels like a place off to the side.
Even to this day, the natives are fighting for rights, to keep the little what they have.
There are no good reservations. Here's your reservation. You can't go across that boundary. This is your reservation. And I grew up on a Navajo reservation, and we're one of the few lucky people that got to remain where our homelands are. But there are other reservations where people were forced there, and they can't fend for themselves like they used to do in the old days. You can't hunt anymore, you can't fish anymore, because you're just stuck on a reservation on these substandard housing, living in third world country conditions, youths killing themselves because there's no future, there's no hope. That's a reservation to me.
Very sad indeed, and one which hopefully makes us think of what Native Americans have gone through and what they're going through even right now at the hands of this white settler colonial entity. Well, let me get our first guests onto this program to give us a first-hand perspective of all of this.
Juan B. Mancius, the tribal chairman of the Carrizo Comacrudo tribe. Juan is the eldest born to a lineage of hereditary chiefs of the Carrizo Comacrudo, but also descends from the Tasuki Pueblo and Kikapo nations. He has held leadership roles as an assistant tribal administrator with the Kikapo Traditional Tribe of Texas and the tribal administrator of the Scotts Valley Band of Poway Indians of California and the Alabama Coushatta Tribe of Texas. Today, Juan focuses on decolonizing both tribal people and others. He has written a 12-step decolonization program and presents it frequently at conferences and seminars.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Welcome to Hidden Files. Can you tell us about the role reservations played in oppressing the natives?
At the very beginning, I think a lot of the reservations that were set up were set to confine and to change our life ways to the lifestyles. And there's a difference between those life ways and those lifestyles. Our life ways are our traditional values and our traditional beliefs compared to the ideals of lifestyles that was brought here by the colonization. And that became very oppressive because we were practically being brainwashed to change, to accommodate, the colonizers that were here. And so for a long time, I think, I know that a lot of our relatives were on other reservations were not allowed to leave the reservation without permission. And that's become commonly most of the undoing of losing a lot of our language, losing a lot of who we are. Of course, then by doing that, they stole a lot of the land.
Well, what are other techniques used by the Europeans, in your perspective, to oppress the natives?
I think that for the longest time, the big oppression in this area has been, the Spanish mission concept of coming in and trying to, they were cutting our hands and cutting our legs and, hanging us and to try to, so those that didn't want to convert. And that happened throughout the Middle Americas, what is called Americas now. So there's a lot of oppression based on being forced to learn one language and to forget your language. The boarding school system was one of those. The missions of this area of the Southwest were another one of those. To the Southwest and through California, they were very oppressive to who you are, who we are, and they outlawed a lot of our ceremonies.
And I mean, what would you say are some of the main problems that natives still face today?
And that's what they did here with the doctrine of discovery. They said if we don't believe the way they do, or live the way they do, that they could kill us. And that's what they did for a long time. And here in Texas, up until the 1940s, they were still killing us. And they were finding ways to take away the land, and that's how they did it. And there's still a high percentage of prisons that have a large percentage of people of color. That should tell you something, too, about they still want to control what's there. And if you speak very loudly, you get they'll find ways to get you. So thing is that they like their system the way it is, and it's only for them, and for the rest of us are just supposed to suck it up, and that's no longer the question here. I'm not here to make the white man comfortable anymore. I'm here to make my people comfortable. So,
and with that, we appreciate you being with us right here at Hidden Files. I'll stay tuned. We're going to welcome our next guest to the program right after this.
Terrence Nelson, Vice Chairman of the American Indian Movement. Terrence is also spokesman for the Okieda Warrior Society, He's former chief of Rosio River Anishinaabe First Nation and has written numerous books and booklets.
Thank you so much for joining us here at Hidden Files. How are reservations still being used today, in your perspective, to repress natives?
Well, one of the things is that you can't pledge any lands. You don't have access to the banks because you can't pledge anything on a reservation land. You're denied access to the economy. So United States, the indigenous peoples living on reservations are probably, they're the most impoverished people because it's deliberately set out like that so that the indigenous people don't have the money to fight the system that they find themselves in. So it is it's economic repression.
Well, there are so many tragic events in Native history. One is the Trail of Tears, even significant by its name. Can you talk about this event and others that you think may even affect your people today?
Well, on the Trail of Tears, they just rounded them right up, and they force marched them to Oklahoma, but that was only one area where they ended up doing that. Amongst the Dakotas and North Dakota, South Dakota, they basically rounded up the people and they forced them onto reservations. And then when they didn't want to do that, like there was lots of different, highlights in history where the indigenous people fought back. That's why you have names like Sitting Bull, Crazy Horse, and those ones that like Geronimo, and those ones that have come through history that fought back. They fought back, and they were just small groups of people most of the time. They didn't have a lot of weapons and guns and things like that. They basically fought back as best they could. And the United States Army was extremely well-equipped. They had all kinds of manufacturing of Gatling guns. They had all kinds of cannons. They had mounted horses and armies and, fighting against people that were just essentially had to they hauled their women and their children and their living, and they basically slaughtered all of the buffalo so that the indigenous people didn't have anything to eat. But there was those are things that people don't understand. Yeah, when you don't have anything to eat, when you have your children, you're looking at your children that are starving, and you're trying to fight back. Well, that's what the indigenous people did. And that Trail of Tears you talk about, that's what they did. They essentially force marched them, and they fed them whatever little that they had, and then they basically just, the indigenous people were falling off and they were dying. It was because when you, as a parent or as a grandparent, and you see these little kids dying, how horrible is that? People don't understand that. The policies even extended to the residential school area, they call it here in Canada, but on the American side, it was called the boarding schools, where our Native Americans were essentially taken from their homes when they were 3, 4, 5, 6 years old and taken to a school run by the churches and run by and they were forcibly indoctrinated into Christianity. And they were told that they were devil worshipers, these kids, that their parents were heathens and everything else like that. So that's the way that they were taught. What's tragic right now is that the Native Americans and our people are, we don't know the true history of what happened to our people, because the one that controls history or the textbooks and is the ones that essentially write the books, and it is the Europeans that wrote the books. So the Trail of Tears is not well known in the U.S. school system. And so, and then they kind of come along and they tell these young white people, that the Native Americans are dependent people, that they get their free money from the United States government and everything else like that. Meanwhile, nobody talks about all of the resources that are sold to keep the to subsidize the Native the American lifestyle. So the gold, the silver, uranium, platinum, oil, trees, water, everything that is now owned by the Europeans and sold to everybody else, they don't pay it to the indigenous people. They pay it to the corporations and to the governments that, that sell this, these products. But it is originally owned by the indigenous people.
Indeed, it is a sad story what happens and continues to happen to the indigenous people. Thank you so much. I appreciate you being with us. Well, I started off this program by talking about so-called poems and TV shows that ignore the humanity of the natives. And this is still a problem and is endemic of settler colonialism. When it is said that they, the white man, the European, discovered this nation and that they birthed a nation from nothing, these lies add to the facade of white supremacy. Now, the very roots of the United States were laid by Native and African genocide and displacement. When in its own constitution, Thomas Jefferson writes about the merciless Indian savages, how likely can we expect a change in the way Washington deals with the original people of that land? As violence is the foundation of white supremacy and imperialism is nourished by exploitation, it is more likely that viewing and treating natives as less than will continue. So it is the natives themselves who must continue to demand their rights and not remain silent. I end this program with a quote from a native chief, Hedmat Toyolaket, who said, "Let me be a free man, free to travel, free to stop, free to work, free to trade, where I choose my own teachers, free to follow the religion of my fathers, free to think and talk and act for myself, and I will obey every law or submit to the penalty. Otherwise, it seems that resistance is the only way." We will definitely be continually to bring you the latest on the natives. For now, though, that's goodbye for me and all the crew right here at Hidden Files. Thank you so much for being with us, and let us hear from you, from your corner of the world. I'm Marzia Hashimi.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.